righty. Our last case for argument, United States v. Shannon. Mr. Delhi.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Anthony Delier, and I represented Mr. Ralph Shannon. In this case, in July of 2007, when he went for sentencing, he went before Judge Crabb. Judge Crabb is a bright, articulate, hardworking judge who follows the law as she finds it. The law at that point in time provided that, according to Rita and several cases within this court, including U.S. v. Rohde 484 F3rd 934 at 937, that judges had advisory guidelines and they were free to use them as they found fit. However, at that same time, we also had other cases from this court. For example, Dean 414 F3rd at 729, which suggested that it was...
I understand. You have this long introduction beginning at page 13, and you're quoting from Gettysburg Address and Martin Luther King, and so what's that about? It's not connected up to anything.
It just sounded good.
It's what we were trying to do at that point in time, Judge, and you know, I apologize, I'm not the astute legal scholar as the judges here are, but what I was trying to do was preserve a constitutional objection, because
what? I don't understand. You captioned it introduction. You don't say what it relates to.
What it related to, Judge, was the Sixth Amendment. At that point in time, although this court and the Supreme Court had said that the guidelines were advisory, in fact, they were not.
What does the Gettysburg Address have to do with the Sixth Amendment?
It provides some support, Judge, for the idea that the Constitution is meaningful and that people would have to face charges and punishment only having been found guilty.
Like that in the Gettysburg Address.
I think, Judge, that actually the Gettysburg Address was a document
so
that
let
did...
Let me ask another. The other thing that... strikes my funny bone is that your client had this child-sized mannequin, and when asked the purpose, said it was to make a robot. What is that about? That's interesting, right? I mean,
actually,
what's it going to make a?
My client was a very lonely, sort of pathetic individual.
Anyway, you might like the companionship of a robot. That's fine. But what did he have in mind?
He basically made a robot
out of a mannequin.
He loves computers and he loves mechanics. He was a geek, and that was something that he just had decided would make a great project for him.
Okay, thank you.
Let me get back on your case. You're
back on
arguing about the term of supervised release here.
That's correct.
Shouldn't be a lifetime of supervised release.
That's correct.
What should it be?
The Congress actually set out a three-tier system for
what should it be in this case?
I think in this case it should be the minimum. I think that the government even conceded at the sentencing hearing that this was a gentleman who had no substantial criminal history in the past. The possession of the pornography, while always horrifying, was in fact probably the least objectionable of all child pornography.
How old is he?
About 63, I believe, Judge.
He's 63 now?
63, I guess he'd be about 59, 58. He's an older gentleman.
Wait a second, how old is he?
Late 50s, early 60s, I don't recall.
Well, he doesn't have too much time to wait for, you know, the time for life to run out. So, you know, it's really a relatively short sentence. If you're 22, it might be a longer problem.
And it might not be such a big deal, Judge, but for one thing, this pathetic loner geek, the one thing that he knows how to do is program computers. Uh-huh. And when he goes to look for a job, every place he goes to look for a job, he's going to
I know, but be realistic. What is the period you're suggesting?
It would be the minimum tier under Congress's plan.
What
would be 15 years.
How long?
It would be 15 years, and with good behavior,
years.
Could be reduced to 10.
60. And you're saying at the age 75, he's going to be looking for computer jobs?
He has no family, nobody
to
depend on.
Look what you're saying. You're saying the reason that it shouldn't be life, should be 10 years, 15 years, is that at the end of the shorter period, he could go back, you know, looking for programming jobs. But he's going to be 75 or so. That's a little late to, especially in programming. That's a young person's field. It just doesn't seem realistic that he has anything to gain from.
That's just one of the practical things, Your Honor. I think that the other thing that should be kept in mind is this is a case where, really, I have great facts. I mean, this is a gentleman who, as far as child pornography goes, had the least objectionable child pornography that there was. And the question really is, why would we automatically give this lifetime supervision?
The judge didn't automatically.
No, it's not automatic.
Truthfully, Your Honor, at the point in time that this case was done, I think that it was fairly close to that because Judge Crabb was under the impression that anything within the guidelines would have been presumptively okay. And what she did was she said the guidelines say unless it's a sex offense, then it should be lifetime supervision. And that's about all the support that there is in the guidelines for that extensive period of time.
Well,
alternatively, the Congress...
Excuse me, but all these challenges to the length of supervised release are really sort of academic, aren't they? I mean, you can always go into a court if you're on supervised release and say, look, I've been on this thing for 8 years. I don't need it anymore. If the government agrees, you get an early discharge, don't you? Isn't that how it works?
I suppose that's theoretically possible.
Well, it's not theoretically. It's done all the time, isn't it?
Not in the district I'm in, Judge. I mean, it may happen in
the
district.
Maybe they don't impose long terms of supervised release.
I think I know of exactly one person who's ever had their supervision shortened in my district.
How many of you know have tried and failed?
At least two others. I've tried it twice. To do that, you have to first off get the agreement of the probation and parole agent. Then I tried to, failing that, which I was never able to do, failing that, I also tried to contact the government, see if they might support it, and have never been able to even get that far.
I mean, this is hard to believe in this case if you got your minimum term that you want of 15 years, that when this poor guy is 75 years old, that he wouldn't come in and...
It wasn't really...
cut him some slack, or he's 75.
This really wasn't...
I mean, only Bauer is older than that here.
This really wasn't the minimum term that I wanted, Judge.
Considerably older.
I think that this was the minimum term that was possible under Judge Crabb's understanding of the law at that time. If you look at that sentencing transcript, you'll notice that there's no place in there where she really says, these are advisory, and I'm going with the advisory guidelines because they're appropriate. What she says is, I find that the advisory guidelines at the bottom of that is appropriate and enough. So I don't think that she really
approached... She described them as advisory guidelines.
Right.
Don't you think that hit the...
Actually, she didn't, Judge.
Yes, she did.
She did earlier in, but not at that point on page 13.
She talked about the lifetime supervision. She says, I understand Mr. Delier's argument that's perhaps not appropriate. I'm not sure that's the case here, because I think Mr. Shannon is the kind of person that tries to get away with things. Maybe he'll stop doing it at some point, but I think our main goal is to protect the community. I don't know what more she has to say.
And returning back to that, Judge, because the guidelines make a lot of sense in the vast run of cases, obviously.
She recognizes that she didn't say, I have to apply the lifetime, you know, supervised release. She doesn't trust your client. She thinks he's a wise guy.
What she used in the end, I believe on page 15, what she finally says in the end is that... page 13 of that transcript. I believe that a sentence of 46 months will be sufficient to protect the community, reflect the serious nature of your actions, and achieve parity with the sentence of similarly situated individuals when the sentence is coupled with a life term of supervised relief with stringent conditions. That is, on the one hand, exactly what you would expect the judge to say, but on the other hand, it isn't what we wanted her to say, because we wanted her to say, I have considered what Congress said. They had three different choices.
No, you don't understand. Her point is she's giving him a light sentence, prison sentence, But in order to make, you know, an appropriate sentence, she has to couple it with a life term of supervised release. That's a discretionary judgment. She's giving him a break on the prison because she's imposing the long supervised release. If she had imposed shorter supervised release, she'd put him in prison longer because she wants to keep him, make sure that he's, from engaging in this pornography.
I understand your position, Judge. Just for the record, I think that Kimbrough at 128 Supreme Court 575.
That's the crack cocaine case. That doesn't have anything to do with this.
It does, I believe, Judge, because the overarching provision is to impose a sentence sufficient but not greater than necessary.
I don't know that. That she's clearly doing that. That's what she's explaining. Kimbrough and Gall are about sentencing discretion. It's about courts of appeals not imposing tight limits on the exercise of sentencing discretion, which is, of course, what you're asking us to do.
Actually, Judge, what I'm saying is that was exactly what happened in this case, and Judge Crabb, being the hardworking person
not.
She has had no
she
choice but to do that.
She didn't say my hands are tied by the Seventh Circuit. She didn't say that.
You also did not say that this is the minimum sentence that I could give.
You ought to take advantage of your red light and copy sneak.
Thank you, Mr. Dallier. So, Ms. Finn?
It pleases the court. My name is Laura Shublinsky Finn. I'm an assistant United States attorney in Madison, Wisconsin. The government stands on its brief on the first issue, I think. We've cited the relevant cases, and I frankly, as I pointed out in my brief, think that the issue was frivolous to raise at this point. With respect to the lifetime supervised release, I would like to just point out that Judge Crabb took a considerable amount of time at sentencing to try to understand Mr. Dallier's argument as it related to Mr. Shannon's ability to work in computers after he was released from prison. She asked him to explain it. She discussed how probation works, how probation would work with Mr. Shannon. This is not ignoring Mr. Dallier's argument. This is not saying enough. This is a judge talking to a defense attorney, attempting to understand an argument, and trying to work with him to explain to him her decision. Her decision is certainly, she's certainly authorized to give lifetime supervision in this case. I think it's appropriate in this case. I think there are lots of things about Mr. Shannon we don't know and can't know, and that's the point of supervised release, of a probation officer keeping an eye on somebody and watching their computer use. I think it's absolutely necessary in this case and certainly reasonable in this case. And the government would simply request that this court affirm the judgment and conviction order of the district court.
Thank you very much, Ms. Finn, and thank you to Mr. Dallier. And